You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Well, it's phenomenal. That's really the best way to put it. It's quite the interesting phenomenon. Is there? I mean, what could be done further? I guess in the realm of the foodstuff. You know, could we just, I guess, collect more cases? I guess, right? I mean, I can't think of any. What you really need is like someone to have a Simonton situation now. You know what I'm saying? Someone who can bring, you know, like that skeptic guy. He's always like, oh, bring me the toilet from a UFO. It's like, well, dude, what if I brought you, you know, a cup of alien mead? Would that satisfy you, dude? You know, of course it wouldn't, but you know what I'm saying. Like, where can we go, I guess, with food research?
That's a great question. You really, really nailed me on this one, because I'm not sure I know of anywhere to go in some respects. I mean, I think that, the community, as it were, of people who have, you know, who are into these things need to make themselves available to people who claim to be abducted. And if they ever claim to, you know, if you can get a hold of somebody who says that they were on a spacecraft last night and were given, you know, a liquid or something, you know, pump their stomach or examine their blood work right away.
Right, because like in the book, there's a story of a dude I think he was like abducted, and he turns up like 2 days later, and then he vomits like a whole bunch of black stuff. And it's like, get that stuff.
Exactly.
Like who
exactly.
Left?
But you know what?
Yeah, who washed that off the lawn? Like that's the villain of the book. You know, we need that stuff.
Yeah, you know, I think that's, I mean, that would be one thing to do. I'm not convinced that just, again, there are plenty of great folks out there who are investigators, and I am not an investigator. I have neither the disposition nor the financial means to actually go out and do some investigation. I'm purely a researcher in a very armchair sort of way, so kudos to the people who are investigating. But I still think there's a lot more research to be done on this, and there's some facets that we can look at. You know, I didn't expect this exchange of food to yield as many compelling connections as it did, and to be as rich an area to sort of investigate. So part of me wonders, are there other things like this? Are there other things that I brought up in this book that we can dig into? Are there other tiny, you know, minutiae of Fortiana that we can really dig into and try to see if maybe, you know, something about the macro tells us about the micro?
Right.
Or
right.
So, rather, sorry, I had that backwards. Something about the micro tells us about the macro.
I knew what you meant. Well, I'll throw you one your way that you should think about is I'd like to see, I don't know if anyone's written a book on this or not, but I'd like to see, I had talked about it with a guest before in the past. I think it was Artie Six Killer Clark, I'm not sure, but it was animal interaction with these entities. I think that would be a great book, and I think there's probably tons of cases out there where there's some kind of interaction between an animal and an entity, and, you know, a pet specifically, not just like, or, you know, an animal on the farm or something, not just like a Bigfoot carrying a dead raccoon, but you know what I mean. I think that would be an interesting area to research.
That's a great idea. Nobody take it. Dibs. No, there's actually a good primer. The only thing that I'm aware has been done on that is that there were some old Flying Saucer Review. There's a recurring series of maybe 3 or 4 articles that talked about the effect of UFOs on small animals. Which was, you know, a series of sort of bullet point stories. I feel like it was a Jenny Randall's series that she put in there. That's one of these things. I've found a couple of things that I hope to look at in the future and sort of deconstruct and say, hey, look, there's this tiny thing that nobody's talking about, and it's in a lot of these things.
Yeah.
Again, I probably am going to continue gravitating toward this, this continuum of trying to find out if all three of these things are related, because that's sort of where a lot of my interests are. But I feel like when something sort of reveals itself to be more of an outlier like the Sasquatch does in this book, at least I can say, okay, well, that doesn't quite fit as well as I thought it did, but there's some connections, but it's, you know, I'm going to put this over here.
Yeah.
You know, and back to your original question, Tim, about where to go forward next in terms of trying to parse out the meaning of all this entity food stuff. I'm not even sure if we did get another set of Simonton pancakes. I'm not even sure that they would, you know, turn out to be anything than the Simonton pancakes did to begin with.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not convinced it would be like this strange blue liquid that you drank would turned out to be water, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
because of the way this phenomena seems to work.
Yeah. And it's like the periodic table theoretically would be like the same for everybody. So it's like, you know, a glass of water to them is the same as a glass of water to us, because it's just water, it's H2O no matter where it is. So who knows? You know what I mean? It might be even more frustrating where you're like, I've got a bottle of alien water. And they're like, it's water. Get out.
Exactly.
You're like, oh, shit. Jim Vubovich in the chat, he asks, we kind of skipped over this a little bit, but because the book is primarily about people receiving or being offered food from these entities. But I guess talk a little bit about instances where people give food to the entities and how they react. Because we talked about how it seems incongruous that an alien would eat human food. Like, theoretically, their digestive system shouldn't even be able to process it. But there are instances where there is a food exchange the opposite way. So I guess, so talk a little bit about that and give me your thoughts on maybe what's going on there. Because that doesn't have all the ulterior motives, you know what I mean? Like, we know there's no ulterior motive if a dude's like, here, alien, have my chocolate bar. It's not part of a larger scheme to abduct and test the alien, unfortunately.
Right. No, it's almost like just trying to make peace. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is very central, as I mentioned a while back, about the fairy lore, which is where you see that most of all, and that's the most ritualized fashion that you'll find it in. You know, you were supposed to leave certain things out for the fairies, and in the hopes that they would, you know, at worst, they would just sort of leave you alone, and at best, they would actually do things for you. You know, they'd clean up the house, or I think there was one story about a fairy in a barn who was taking cheese and was shucking and stealing the neighbor's corn and shucking it and, you know, making the farmer a pretty penny. Because abductions tend to be, I won't really say spontaneous, but they tend to be in situations where you're less likely to have food, you know, on the road, in your bedroom, whatever. You don't run into a lot of examples where people are giving food to an alien. I will say that there was a rather entertaining case from Brazil. I'm trying to remember the guy's name. He was Plinio Brigado. That's his name.
Okay.
And in 1996, he had picked up a six pack and was on his way home, and these two creatures landed in this craft and got out of it, and then they asked him aboard, and he said, "Well, I saw that they were good people, so I just decided to hop on in." And he said that they were hideous, and they examined them, and they gave him a fruit that looked like a papaya and something like an empanada and something that tasted like Campari. But he shared one of his beers with them, and they seemed to like it. And then they went off to Mars.
Nice.
You know, it's just another one of those bizarre stories.
Well, that's the great part.
But,
to put over the book
just
a moment, that's the great part. If you like these kind of really odd stories, the book is like that. The book is all odd stories. You know what I mean? It's like chock full of like the stranger stories of this. Of this genre that you can imagine. So if people who like that kind of stuff will love the book.
I flip it. You know, there's some great cases that seem very solid that I had to leave out because they just weren't as interesting. You know, so-and-so ate a bitter liquid, you know, drank a bitter liquid. And there's some cases that I had to include because they were just so funny and off the wall that it's just like, this is, you know, this is this is very emblematic of what's happening, and it's just too good to pass up. But again, in that case, you know, the motive of Brigada was very clear. He's trying to make peace with these folks. He's trying to say, hey, thanks for giving me your food. Here, have a beer. Which is what you know run into a lot these days. There was a really great case too from MUFON Journal of a lady in Minnesota who found some three little men who knocked on her door, and they like were as soon as she opens up the door, they're like pointing at their mouths, and they have these large heads and these eyes, and she's like, she's inside, and she's just giving them like bread and butter and sausage, and they're all like, yeah, that's great, and she gives them coffee and they hate it. which is a lot like the Hingley case, which is one of the more famous cases of like that from England that was in 1979, and she waved her husband goodbye, and these three basically gray aliens with these multicolored wings floated into her house, and she was paralyzed, and she talked to them about how it's Christmas, and they ask for water, and the water, instead of them drinking it, the water just disappears, and as they leave, she hands them mince pies. Just a wonderful thing. But the thing that's interesting to me is that you're not, again, for Western culture to have processed and commodified food the way it has, you don't find people giving aliens, Swedish fish. You don't find them giving them Reese's Pieces. They all tend to be things that you would have given, you know, fairies back in the day. Hmm. They're all very simple foodstuffs, staples, really. It's one of those things where the human motive is always seems to be one of hospitality or just, you know, good naturedness. And maybe we're completely misconstruing all this, and that's all that this is from the alien and fairy side, is they're just trying to be nice. And I'm sorry it traps you in the fairyland, but here's some food. We're just trying to be nice. But I doubt it.
Yeah, it's very perplexing. So, yeah, so we have cases about people giving. I was thinking that after I said that. Maybe we should take on a more sinister bent. Maybe we need to just, like, just trick the alien, you know, give them a little taste of their own medicine, no pun intended, where you're like, here, have this chocolate bar, alien, you know, and then they eat it, and they're like, oh, no, dude, you drug me.
Or, here, have this pill that raises your consciousness, and it's just a Percocet.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, here's another part of the – I wanted to ask you this. You said earlier, you know, mm-hmm. Well, this is a tough question, so it's a bit – I apologize, but I feel like it needs to be asked. A lot of the stuff that's in the book is – there's a fair amount of stuff that's based on abduction research, and abduction research has really come under fire quite a bit in the last decade or so, especially the last, like, 5 or 6 years. And, you know, there's a certain school of thought that's like, listen, we can't trust any of this stuff anymore because the hypnosis – is spotty at best, and so it sort of taints the information. I guess, did you consider that, and how do you really kind of grapple with that challenge, if you will, of sort of like looking at information that now we, in retrospect, may have been coming from sort of less than stellar research methods. Let's say that nicely.
No. It's a great question, and it really does make the entire endeavor really difficult. And, you know, I mentioned earlier questions that keep me up at night. And this is one that plenty of nights I fell asleep thinking, like, you know, oh, am I really doing my best to separate the wheat from the chaff? I made, you know, there are some cases that I ran up against that I absolutely tossed out without even a second thought. There were some really cool things from Phil Imbrogno that I found. And I'm like, I just can't incorporate that. Maybe if I found it in another source, but if it's coming straight from Phil Imbrogno with all the stuff that happened with him,
exactly, yeah,
his credentials, I just can't, you know, I can't address that. So I tried to find people that are still well thought of. Having said that, there are some internet cases involved here. this if anyone is familiar with the Colbert Show, he used to use this term truthiness. You know, the cases that I did include in the book, I tried to pick out things that were exemplary of larger trends that I saw. So I'm comfortable with saying that there's probably, as with any book like this, there's probably a significant portion of this that is either hoaxed or mistaken identity, or is outright fabrication, or is, you know, or is some sort of mental delusion. But the trends that I really tended to focus on, the trend of liquid, the trend that these are given in encounters of very short duration to seemingly to produce an effect, are so strong that I know that if we follow the rule of thumb that, you know, say 10% of all anomalous encounters are actually factual, I know in my heart that, well, it sounds really, it's the wrong thing to say, I don't know in my heart, the data seems to suggest that, I caught myself there, the data seems to suggest those trends would still hold true.
Yeah.
If that's sort of a roundabout way of answering that question. So a lot of the trends that I latched onto, from what I could tell, were so strong that that's the case.
Now I see what you're saying. You're saying kind of like, regardless necessarily of the suspect nature of how the information was gleaned, it fits in with the overarching trend, so it's not really necessarily something that should be completely tossed out. You know, like, don't toss the baby out with the bathwater kind of idea.
Right, and there was one of the ways that I finally felt comfortable, you know, sitting with that sort of conclusion was I happened upon a really good it's a French documentary about anomalous encounters in Iceland called I'm not going to try to pronounce it. It's in the book. It's in the footnotes. It's a book, and there was this girl who said that she was playing among some rocks and fell down, and a fairy lady invited her in and fed her and gave her drinks. And as soon as I heard this, I said to myself, it's going to be a fruit drink and a bread because of what I'd seen in fairy encounters. And sure enough, she says, it was some funny tasting banana juice and a spiral shaped cake. And to me, that was sort of a little confirmation that, okay, what I'm starting to see now when I look at new cases, for me, it's becoming predictive. I can anticipate that an abductee is going to be given a liquid.
Yeah.
I can anticipate that, or if they're not given a liquid, they're probably going to be given a pill. If it's a contactee experience, they're either going to be given a fruit juice or, you know, some sort of fruit. You know, if it's a fairy, it's going to be alcohol or fruit juice or bread, you know. And to me, you know, sort of looking at some other cases since then, that's what's made me feel really comfortable that some of the conclusions that I've come to are well-reasoned, at least.
Hmm.
So, that's a great question. I'm glad, and I'm glad you brought that up because it needs to be asked.
Yeah, because, you know, it's... I'm sure there's a, like I said earlier, there's a school of thought that wants to throw it all out, and I'm sure that's one of the would be a critic would say about the book, you know what I'm saying? So it needs to be addressed, so that way at least you can kind of bat down that argument, you know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, no, absolutely, and you know, one of my good friends from college is going to get his master's in astronomy, and he's very, he falls into the atheist skeptic science-minded mode, and we've been going back and forth about this project, and he's been ribbing me some, and I've been ribbing him some, and calling it good-natured fun. But you know, and I've got to come back to, I remember one of the great things that Mike Clellan says is he encounters people who say, well, this isn't scientific, and his response is always, well, I'm not a scientist. In a similar way, I was talking to this friend of mine from college, and he's like, what? He's like, what am I going to get out of this? I think all this is a bunch of crap. And I said, look, at the very least, look at it as modern folklore.
Right.
And look at it as, trying to parse out what the similarities are in a lot of these disparate elements. And, you know, I think if you look at the trends in aggregate, either there's something objective going on, or the union and collective unconscious is much stronger than we ever had any idea of, because some of these consistencies are just so striking, you know, to me. Not necessarily even with the entity food thing, but with the paranormal in general. You know, you'll have people who have never read a book in their life on alien abduction say that they had this experience, and they never believed in it, but there was a buzzing in their ears, and they saw this. They were taken to this white room, and there was this entity that got really close to their face and generated love, and they were strapped to a table. You know, just some of these things that aren't as popularized in pop culture. You know, you see a lot of television shows, and they don't necessarily depict the buzzing in the ears. They don't necessarily depict the, you know, the leader gray coming up in your face and projecting love. But they'll report these things,
right?
And with a degree of consistency, again, either we are all very much connected in what we know, and there are some serious archetypes that we're projecting, or there's an objective component.
Yeah, exactly. Or could even, yeah. I guess I always like to sort of straddle the fence anyway. It could be both somehow, you know. It's, we don't.
Yeah, and for all my claims of, I feel like I'm coming off as a little bit sure about things. I have no idea. You know, if it means us getting to the bottom of this tomorrow, and every single word of this book was proven completely in the wrong direction, I would love it, because it means we got to the bottom of it. You know.
I know. Yeah, we could get on with our lives.
I'm just, yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Instead of this all-consuming mess.
Now, what do you? We're nearing the end. You want to hang out for a little bit longer past the live show? A couple more minutes?
I'd absolutely love to.
All right, cool. I always feel bad putting the guest on the spot. I should stop doing that. I feel bad. I always do this on the live show where I'm like, hey, you want to hang out longer? No one ever is like, no. But maybe I just should stop doing that. I don't know. But
no, that's fine.
We're kind of nearing the end. Have you, right now, you're in the eye of the hurricane of the release of the book, obviously. So you're going to be on Coast to Coast this Sunday, and you're on Banal of America right this moment, and you're doing all kinds of shows and stuff. But have you, I'm sure at some point it sort of crossed your mind what might be next, what sort of area you might want to look at next, you know, or other projects you might want to tackle.
Yeah, I'm really doubling down on writing at this point in my life, and anyone who's listening who knows me, that'll probably all make more sense in a couple of weeks, hear what I mean by that. But I'm really focusing on this aspect of my life, because it's been neglected, and now that somebody actually, as Rudolph once said, I'm cute! You know, she thinks I'm cute! now that I've actually had somebody, you know, that isn't my mom, say that they enjoyed my writing, I'm actually going to sort of start to look at some other stuff. So, again, really looking at these little minutiae aspects of the paranormal, or, you know, I come from a journalistic background where they're always talking about, well, what's the angle? Well, these other papers are writing the same story. What's this new angle? So I'm really hoping to look at the paranormal in a way that we can remedy this issue that I think we have. Excuse me, which is we miss the trees for the forest, to reverse a common phrase.
Yeah.
We're so busy trying to figure out what's the answer that we never say, hey, look, there's this other little small trend. We might not find the answer, but we might get one little piece of a clue that might lead us closer to the answer. So I'm playing it a little bit close to the vest, because I'm not entirely decided. I have like four or five different ideas, but that's definitely on the horizon. And then just this past weekend, I kind of cracked a cool fiction idea that I'd like to get into as well. So we'll see.
Nice, nice.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned in the book, I forget, it was right sort of the end, and you mentioned sort of the idea of food exchange with ghosts. Has that actually ever been reported? And do you know anything about that? Because obviously that's not in the book. I think you mentioned specifically, like, oh, there's other avenues you could explore, like this food exchange with ghosts. Have you heard of that before, or is that something that's completely, you know, really on the fringe?
Yeah, it's really hard to find anything about ghosts and food exchange. The one thing that I was able to sort of pin down was or one thing that sort of came my way was I was talking to this bartender one time. She was talking about.
That's where a lot of my best ideas come from as well, yeah.
Yeah, right. She saw me thumbing through one of these giant books that I gotten from the library, and she was asking. We started talking about a book project, and she said, "Oh, she said my stepfather got a drink from a ghost." Like, what are you talking about? And apparently, her mother and stepfather were asleep in a hotel that was purportedly haunted. And according to this girl, her mother woke up in the middle of the night, and there was a lady in white trying to give her husband some sort of liquid. She screamed and turned on the light, and the woman vanished.
Wow.
That's that. And again, I haven't looked super hard. I don't mean this in a flippant way, but ghosts aren't super interesting to me because I've had enough things happen in my life that it's kind of like, yep, well, there are ghosts. Can we move on now? I still think it would be interesting to, if I could find enough to write about that, I would love to. I did sort of a half-assed attempt to see if there was anything out there, and there's not a whole lot. Now, again, if anybody wants to prove me wrong, please send it my way. I guess I can plug my email address. It's foodtaboo, FOODTABOO, @gmail.com. That's what I'm using for all my correspondence with these projects. If anybody wants to be kept up to date on what I'm doing next, or anybody has any encounters or things that they've heard or things that they think I should look into, please send it my way.
Mm.
I love all the help I can get. So,
foodtaboo @hotmail.com?
Sorry, Gmail.
Gmail.
Yeah. Gmail, yeah.
I'm the one with the ancient Hotmail account. Sorry. Yeah, that's interesting, ghosts. This is, I guess, beyond the fairies, the Bigfoot, and the aliens, all you have left is ghosts as far as other elemental, other entities, if you will. So, yeah.
Well, there are some people who would argue the case for vampires and, you know, there's a Linda Godfrey, you know.
Oh, like the werewolf.
Wolfman
yeah.
stuff. Yeah, but I don't, you know.
I feel like all that fits in under the fairy elemental sort of realm.
Yeah, I mean, maybe.
I don't know, yeah.
At the very least, I don't think there are any cases of a wolfman giving someone, you know, a beer. So,
Red Pill Junkie wants to know, and I recall this is in the book, Red Pill Junkie, so you should definitely pick up the book, which he probably will, I'm sure. But he wants to know if you talk with people who've experienced eating food during a lucid dream.
Red Pill, I promise you I'm sending a copy your way because you provided a great polish on this book, so I really do appreciate it. It's really interesting. His buddies over at Grimerica had a great conversation with Robert Wagoner, who is a lucid dreaming researcher. And he was discussing, you know, I think the guys on Grimerica claim that they have in some dream states smoked a joint and they've, you know, woken up feeling kind of buzzy. And Robert Wagoner mentioned a guy in Holland who had decided to become a teetotaler on all recreational substances for about 10 years. And one night he had a very vivid dream and he realized that he was in the dream state and he was on an airplane. And the stewardess comes by with, like, you know, this, you know, tray of joints for him to smoke. And he's like, well, heck, I'm in a dream. It doesn't matter. And according to this guy, and of course this is anecdotal, but according to this guy, he lit up and he enjoyed the body buzz. And he, according to him, when he woke up, he still felt stoned for a couple of hours. So even if that's completely placebo, it sort of emphasizes the fact that substances don't necessarily have to be substances to have the effect of the actual substance, you know.
Yeah, the act of consuming the substance might be the key. Like we said earlier,
right.
It might be part of the show. I definitely feel like there's – well, it's interesting. You know, we say, like, there's got to be a connection here between the ETs and the fairies. And it's like – but there's the stark difference in that the aliens, when they administer this stuff, most of the time they're just forcing it onto people, you know. They're just like
– Right.
In the other instance, it's the fairies. They're kind of like they make you you know, they offer it, but they don't make you do it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, exactly. And, you know, we were talking about how there are these, you know, maybe aliens and fairies aren't the same thing. Maybe they're just two pieces of a Venn diagram that meet in the middle. And maybe the one of the things they have in common is that, let's say that there are mystical spiritual fairies and there are flesh and blood aliens, and they both have realized that they can, you know, influence human beings by, you know, being symbolic with food and with gesture. Maybe that's one of the things that connects the two phenomena, you know. I don't know. But yeah, there's a much greater mystery underneath all this, that's for sure. And it ties into, you know, I've said many times, I think it really, when you get down, when you dig down deep enough, it all really ties into this issue of consciousness.
Yeah, yeah. There's something going on here. It's remarkable. The book really sort of like it's. I feel like it's like scratching at something that it's very that's just under the surface. You know what I mean? I feel like it's like
I
feel like you kind of picked up on some kind of clue here that we hadn't really considered looking at before, which is awesome.
Well, I appreciate it. That means a lot coming from you. You know, I tried to write the book as if this could be someone's first book on the unexplained. Or it could be their 101st book on the unexplained. I tried to approach it from a straightforward enough trajectory, but in the course of writing it, yeah, there were so many days where I'm like, I feel like if I just got one more book about shamanism from interlibrary loan, I can blow this whole thing apart. I just achingly close feeling that like there's something here. I don't know exactly where it goes, but there's something here. Damn it.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Has anyone ever died from one of these food exchanges? Or are they all just kind of like it changes their experience? It ends their experience. It kicks off their, you know what I mean?
To me, the answer to that is kind of like the answer, has anybody eaten fairy food and never returned from fairyland?
Right, right.
You know, how do we know, you know? There was a gentleman in Spain. He was a guy who was out hunting. He was a professor, and he was with some students, I believe, and he was in Spain. Yeah, like I said, and he fell asleep under a tree and awoke, and there was this egg-shaped craft, and it latched onto him, and he passed out, and he woke up in a room. And this is a very Cliff Notes version of this encounter.
Yeah.
And they said that, you know, we didn't mean to, but we scared you so bad that we actually ended up giving you a heart murmur. And we had to take you in to make sure that you were okay and to repair you. And they gave him a red liquid and some, what he described as hot whitish broth and a type of marmalade. And they continued to talk to him, and he... Like the next day or so, he started having some chest pains and was in and out of a hospital for like the remaining 4 years because he had some symptoms. So I guess it's hard to draw a distinct cause and effect picture from that. It could have been, you know, the initial problem that they gave him to begin with, or it could have been the food. But that's the only case that I can think of off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Where it seems like there might be a direct connection. And of course there might be, you know, there might be a thousand more where people, you know, where people died close afterwards and just didn't live to say, I shouldn't have had the salmon mousse.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. 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 There could be, like you said about being stuck in the fairyland. It's like someone could encounter some kind of entity. They could eat the thing. They could drop dead. Like, and they just find him the next morning. No one ever knows that they ate it or whatever. So who knows, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like the old joke about letting the black-eyed kids into the house. It's like, we don't know what happens because no one's lived to tell the story of what happens. So.
Well, it's like all the David Politis missing 411 things. For all we know, every single one of them is someone who didn't return from the fairyland.
Exactly.
But there's an interesting connection there too. Red Pill brought this to my attention, is that a lot of the stories involve, you know, kids looking for berries. The kids who come back were always looking for berries, or went to go looking for berries, or went to go berry foraging. So there might be a connection there. And I believe on.
Going to ask you that actually.
Sorry,
I was going to ask you if you looked at the Politis stuff, because it seems like it's almost it really is eerily similar to kind of like the fairy mythos.
Yeah, I mean it's one of the it's of the same ilk, I think. I just trying to wrestle my arms around this subject since nobody had written about it before. I tried to focus on the exchange, the actual act of exchange.
Mm.
And in a lot of those cases, you don't have entities explicitly exchanging food. There might be one or two that I seem to recall where somebody said, like a little girl said that a bear gave them some berries or some blackberries or something. But for the most part, entities aren't really prominent in those stories. So that's something I'd like to look into in the future. But as far as connecting with the fairy mythos, I mean, Paulinus was on, I think it was maybe Where Did the Road Go or The Unexplained or one of these other podcasts a while back. And was talking about, A, how a lot of disappearances happen around granite fields.
Mm-hmm.
90 seconds. Do we need to wrap it up and say goodbye to everybody? Or
yeah, we can do that. Yeah, we'll leave the to live listeners. It's to be continued into the next onto the MP3. So you'll have to download that, folks. But I want to give thanks to obviously big thanks to Joshua here for coming on the show, giving us the extra time. The book is A Trojan Feast. You can get it at Anomalous Books. Just punch in anomalousbooks.com. And big thanks to all the folks in the chat room. It was a lively chat room tonight. Jim Lydica, Jim Vujovic, Red Pill Junkie, Flap Doodle, who showed up towards the end, Captain Image, 1966, Stephanie Quick, who wrote in and is a big fan of your work as well. So thanks to all those guys
who
joined us in the chat room. And let me think if there's anything else we need to say to the live listeners. Not really. Stay tuned for more with me and Joshua on the MP3. So download that from Banal of America, and hopefully we'll get it to folks tomorrow afternoon. I think I'll probably have a chance to get it posted at BOA. So stick around, and we'll chat a little bit more about this food stuff and talk a little bit more about the esoteric and the mysteries of all this and, you know, why the hell we're still doing it after all these years. So stay tuned for that. Thanks for tuning in on the live show, folks. All right. They're all gone. It's just you and me now.
All right. Sorry, I didn't know if you want.
No, it's fine,
make
dude.
Sure that we didn't. All right, cool.
It's fine. I literally play by no rules, as you know, so. it's all good.
No rules and no comparison.
There you go.
And thanks for being such a. Well, I'm sorry. I'm fanboying again. I'll stop.
Now you have to finish at least a sentence. Being such a what? I'm so afraid.
for being such an asshat. For being such a great host and for asking some really great questions.
Telling a story here about
the Paulides thing, right?
Yes, the Paulides stuff.
And he mentioned something that I found fascinating because he's somebody who I really respect in the way that he's approached this too, where he's tried to approach it and let the data sort of speak for itself. And he because I think he might have even gone in with some preconceptions and sort of reevaluated what he thought, because he's become quite coy about his feelings on the whole phenomena. But
he won't mention anything. Yeah, it's really commendable, but also kind of like a little frustrating because you want to. I'm a big fan of just speculating out of my ass all the time, so it's like I like speculating. So it's part of me that's like, just speculate. You're the one with all the info. But I respect that.
I totally know what you mean. Like it's like meeting someone who is really strong about being abstinent. And you're like, but come on, I know that you have feelings from time to time. What are you saying? You know, how do you deal with it? So it's sort of like, come on, tell me what. I know that you have thoughts from time to time. Like, tell me what some of your thoughts are.
Right, right.
But I do really respect him for that. But he mentioned how there's this trend that he talks about where people disrobe and they are found face down a lot of times. And he said that, I believe this, and forgive me anyone who listened to this and I'm misquoting, but I believe that he mentioned that it was traditional to supplicate yourself before the Minahuna, the Hawaiian fairies. If you encounter them, the best way to avoid being hurt was to take your clothes off and bury your face in the sand. Which is a very compelling little tidbit, I thought.
Yeah, those stories in the book. I've read a couple of the 411 books. The only thing that's like maddening about them is it seems like the there's a really small amount of people who kind of live to tell the tale, and you rarely ever get any really good information. But I think if you really plumb the depths of those stories, I think you would find there's a lot of fairy lore that kind of connects with these things. At least that's my theory.
Yeah, I mean, I think so too. And the question isn't, you know, for the people who are laughing about fairies, the question isn't whether or not they're objectively fairies. The question is whether or not this is all describing some sort of phenomena that is still in place today in a lot of these wild places, which, again, is what has always really interested me in fairies, is this idea that there's something just below the surface of reality. Yeah.
Well, I should do a show on just fairies purely on their own, but it's like, it's such a weird... It's just such a weird, I don't know, genre, or like you said earlier, it's like there's so many different things that it encompasses that it's like, what is really going on? It reminds me of the Mac Tony stuff, though, in a lot of ways, too. It's like, maybe there is sort of a second intelligence that exists alongside us that we haven't quite been able to interact with. Maybe they don't even want to interact with us. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think this comes back to this idea of spokes on a wheel. I think a lot of these ideas and theories have their own ring of truth, and Max definitely had some true strength to it. The problem with having somebody, like, I don't even know who you go to for having somebody on for a fairy show, you know, because I feel like you'd end up getting somebody who wants to talk about, you know, love and light and some sort of silly stuff.
Well, I know Anomalous did a compendium of, like, I'd have to look it up here on their thing, Anomalous Books, but they did a fairy book.
Right, but I think that lady who compiled those passed away.
Yeah.
I might be misspeaking.
Yeah, Marjorie Johnson, yeah. But still, I think it's still worth looking at, yeah.
Yeah, if nothing else, have Greg on the show. I mean, I know that he's found a lot of interesting parallels between the alien thing and the fairy thing. W.Y. Evans Wentz dissertation, Fairy Faith in the Celtic Countries, is just astoundingly good. It's a great thing to read. You've got to pick it up.
I'll check it out. Have you, now, beyond the food stuff and that sort of thing, is there any other sort, you know, I'm a big Bigfoot fan, but I'm also really into UFOs at the same time, you know, and also I dig into conspiracy. Obviously, I do all kinds of crap on this show, but it's like, I also like true crime and different. So is there any other sort of area of the paranormal that you're interested in that didn't really, you know, wasn't in the book per se, because it had nothing to do with, like, the food exchange stuff?
Absolutely. And part of it, I mean, I wrote about this because it was what I felt most comfortable writing. I would love to write and tackle some sort of subject on consciousness, because I feel like that's at the bedrock of every discussion that we talk about in this field.
Absolutely, yeah.
But part of me feels so out of my depth with that, and I feel like I would have to spend a lot of time just boning up on it. You know, I listen to people like Alex Sakaris, and what a great job he's done with Skeptico, one of the most fascinating podcasts out there that I listen to. But For me to write about that and to have any sort of new ideas, I think would be sort of challenging. But I'd love to write about it.
You talk about the nebulousness of the Foison, you know, consciousness. That's a super nebulous. And then you get into, like, deep scientific stuff, so your eyes really gloss over. Really difficult subject to tackle.
Yeah, I mean, and some of these philosophical concepts, too, about, you know, materialism. And, you know, about how how shifting away from that paradigm, it just absolutely, I don't know if I'm that articulate. You know, I found other things interesting, like I have a big soft spot for synchronicities, although I feel like there's a lot of people who have written about stuff out there, but about synchronicities. But having had some striking ones in my past, I have a huge soft spot for synchronicities.
Do I dare ask synchronicity again, was?
I thought you'd never ask. the one that I've had that, not to sound too high and mighty about it, but there's one that I've had that really kind of dwarfs almost every other synchronicity that I've ever talked to other people about. Because to me, it's a true synchronicity in the real Jungian sense, where it's deep and it's profound and it's way beyond chance, and it means something to me in the moment, versus like, I was driving across town and I saw the same person twice, or I was thinking about the person. That's not really a synchronicity.
Yeah.
This is a confluence of several things coming together. So I was coming back from a gig in Austin, Texas, and I was on a plane. I was getting ready to take off, and I know that it wasn't a dream, because I do not dream. I don't sleep prior to takeoff. I just don't, because most of the accidents happen on takeoff and landing, and I'm a paranoid and a hypochondriac, so I just doesn't happen. So so I was seeing this girl at the time. She was one of these girls who had like two first names, as you know, her first name and her last name. So let's call her Whitney Cameron.
Okay.
You know, so that could be a first name. Cameron could be a first name. So So she was getting her master's in oboe performance, and I was finishing up my master's in music history, and it was a really positive relationship, but something wasn't really sitting with me just right. I was worried about us not seeing enough of each other, and I was just thinking about her a lot. So she had actually come to the University of Georgia from a school in Cincinnati, Ohio. So we've got Whitney Cameron, oboe, and Cincinnati, Ohio. Within the space of 30 seconds, I'm worried about her, I'm stressed out about her, I'm doing a crossroad on the plane. Within the space of about 30 seconds, I solve the crossword puzzle question for double reed instrument, four letters, oboe. The person in front of me drops their ticket, which lands at my feet. Their final destination was Cincinnati, Ohio. And the gentleman who dropped the ticket turns around to face me in his seat, and he has two tattoos on either forearm that I asked him later were the names of his daughters, Cameron and Whitney.
Huh.
Yeah.
Weird.
All within the space of like 30 seconds. And even though I didn't, you know, even though that relationship ended shortly after that, to me it was like God, the universe, fate coming together and saying, look, just stop worrying, okay? We, you know, we hear that you're worried. It's fine. Stop worrying about this. But, yeah, that confluence of things all at once in that quick, rapid succession just really reeks to me of a pretty startling synchronicity.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. And you think, what do you make of that? Part of me wonders if it's like something. I wonder sometimes if we can generate these kind of things like with our mind. You know what I mean? Like I was talking to Marie Jones, Larry Flaxman a long time ago, and it's like I guess someone else has already introduced this idea, but it was I said to them, we were talking about the nature of the universe and reality and everything, and I was like, what if like the universe and everything just starts when you're born? You know what I mean? And it's like all of this is just a creation of your own mind, if you will. You know what I mean? So, and you just filled in all that prehistory and everything. So like you're on the plane and then it's on your mind and it's sort of a glitch in the system where like, you know, you accidentally throw in Easter eggs of a sort into the moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, that's a bit solipsistic. Just to think that, you know, this is all me. And I, on a fundamental level, I have a little bit of it, from like a, oh, this is probably the wrong place to bring this up, but almost like from a moral standpoint, it almost sounds narcissistic.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. I think that there's, you know, I think it was maybe even Jung who compared synchronicities to islands jutting above the surface of the ocean, parts where there's underlying bedrock connecting everything, but we just see these little, pieces that jut above the surface. And if we, returning to this consciousness issue, if we really adopt the perspective that consciousness and not matter is the fundamental constant in the universe, then it's entirely possible. You know, I mean, there are people who have made tons of money on saying, you can do anything, visualize where you want to be. This is the secret. You know, I wrote my mom a check for $1 million and told her to cash it in 3 years when I was big in Hollywood. And I wonder sometimes if there's actually a real kernel of truth to that. I mean, and in some ways, you know, I've experienced this a little bit myself with this book, because I was super apprehensive, but as soon as I said I'm going to write this and I feel like it's going to touch on something that people haven't talked about before, it ended up, you know, it ended up being a real huge blessing in my life. So I think it's entirely possible that we can at the very least influence our reality.
Yeah.
You know, sort of like a more elaborate and more potent version of the observer effect.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's entirely possible.
It's intriguing. So synchronicity, that's another area you like to explore in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I would. I don't know what I could bring to the table that some other really great minds haven't already brought. So that would be my only hesitation. You know, I'm still really interested in entheogens and the psychedelic experience and ayahuasca. I think that all those are all pretty ripe and fertile grounds that people are really just now starting to examine from a non-scientific, but are trying to sort of take a look at those from a Fortean perspective, as it were.
It's intriguing. I'm glad you've done this, you know, I like people who do new stuff, you know what I mean? So I really appreciate that you did some new stuff as far
well,
as the food
and
exchange stuff.
I appreciate it. You know, if I didn't have anything new to say, I probably wouldn't say it, because it's like, you know, it's like whenever I have been on an album, I'm like, does the world really need another CD? Do we really need another album? Because there's so much media out there, and it's like, yeah, it's all sort of, you know, how different is all this stuff really? So if I hadn't seen this hole in the literature with what I perceived as a giant bullseye on it, I probably would have never even, wouldn't be having this conversation with you. So...
Well, it's good.
I appreciate it.
It's good stuff, man. The book's great. It's really well written. And when I came into the show tonight, I tried not to, you know, based on my notes and everything. I could have gone two ways, I guess you could say, with the interview. I could have been like, I could have come in with just a set of stories, but I didn't really want to do that. You know what I mean? It's like, because the book is chock full of great stories. And I could have been like, bing, bang, boom. Okay, tell me the story about, you know, I only asked you like two stories, but... I could have sat here and gone all night just going, tell me the story on, you know, page 92 about the lady in Barcelona that had the experience. So it's it's remarkable stuff.
Well, you know, it's one of the things I didn't realize until I was completely done with it and I looked back on it. I said, it would appear as though a solid half of the book is just, you know, analysis and that sort of crazy thought experiment that I go off into in the last few chapters. I felt like sometimes I might have rushed through some of the stories, but you know, just trying to get to, okay, what does it all mean? You know, is there any other, is there possibly some sort of meaning to this, is what I was really salivating and wanting to get to. So I was going to say, I appreciate that nuanced approach instead of, you know, can you tell me about what Sasquatch offer? Can you tell me about what fairies offer?
right.
Sort of dry approach. So, and that's, you know, it's, again, fanboying. That's what you do best. It really is. So.
Well, I hope people enjoyed the conversation, because I felt like I kind of bounced around a little too much, but because I didn't really pin you down, but I felt like this is such a nebulous topic that it's more interesting just to kind of have a natural flowy conversation with some tentpoles, but otherwise, you know, not hit you with like I said, tell me the Barcelona story or all that other stuff.
Yeah. Well, I found out a long time ago when people asked me what my book was about, I found out a long time ago that there is no elevator pitch for this book.
Yeah.
You know, it's, to understand the significance of why this topic was approached in the first place, that whole food taboo about being trapped with the fairies, that takes a minute to explain to someone, and then you can get into depth on why you're, you know, trying to look at these other, the other two subjects as well. But yeah,
it's a challenging subject to tackle. I really, like I said, kudos to you for doing it, because it's always been there too on the periphery, but no one's really sort of dug into it. And I think, you know, we danced again around the sort of conclusions of the book, and folks should definitely go and pick this up. It's for any serious student of the field, it's just worthy of their library, because it's the kind of book that you can go back to again and again, where you're like, wait a minute, what's the, you know, it makes a good reference book for this enigma of food exchanges.
If you hear those kind words.
Yes,
really
feel
do.
Free to use all these wherever you.
I'll use all the words.
Use all of the words, but yeah, it's really interesting. And like I said, we dance around the ending kind of, but at the same time, it's like, I think people can kind of, especially my listeners, I hope, can kind of like read between the lines here that we're saying, like you're saying, that this isn't just a straight up food exchange. There's something going on here, symbolically, psychologically. We don't really know exactly, but there's clearly, it goes beyond, hey, I took you into the fairy realm, you look hungry, have a fruit, you know. It's like
right, a Trojan feast.
A Trojan feast.
Yeah, that was a great call on Patrick's part.
Yeah, that's why he gets the big bucks.
Yeah.
Let me see if there's anything else to really ask you about. I purposely avoided the Roswell slides thing, because hopefully that's old news by now. So.
Oh, Lord. Yeah. I'm done. I'm done with that.
Yeah. There's nothing really else going on in the field of well, see, this is what I like, too, about what you did, because there's so much – there's nothing – you know, they say there's, like, nothing new under the sun or something, you know, but it's like in ufology, that's especially the case. It's like I haven't seen anything new come up that's really excited me. With the exception of like stuff like that you're doing, stuff that Albert Rosales does, you know, stuff where it's like, okay, let's circle back and take another look at what we've got so far, and try and pick up something out of it that we can work with, which I think is a really good approach.
Right. I mean, let's reexamine all that goofy shit. You know, I mean, some of that Greg always brings up on whenever he mentions Albert Rosales on Radio Mysterioso, as he always says, the banana-shaped aliens covered in terry cloth.
Exactly.
And you know, I think that it's that old adage of the weirder it sounds, the more likely I am to believe it. You know, what if, you know, operate from the point that maybe all of this is told in an honest fashion, and then try to sift and winnow and see what sort of nuggets you're left with when all the sand's clear of the I'm mixing too many metaphors here. when the dust is settled, see what's left.
Right, because
you know, I
contemporary ufology, we're kind of, you know, grasping at straws here, looking for something we can't, you know. I think we've sort of run past the treadmill of what we can do or something. You know, we run out of space or something. If that makes any sense. Now I'm mixing metaphors.
Right. You know, I know that you again, you and Greg have mentioned, I think in your appearance, about like the impending death of ufology, and or how it should just, you know, die and rise like a phoenix from the ashes. And I feel like I'm late to the party going, no, wait, there are other things. There are other things that should be said and seen, you know. And hopefully a couple of my other ideas are sort of looking at it from that perspective. You know, just things that we don't think maybe would have had any relevance. Like, what if there is some sort of link? Here's a book idea. And I swear, if anybody steals it, I'm going to come find you. What if there is some significance to the types of entities that have purportedly been encountered in war zones?
In war zones, okay. Yeah.
There are – in war zones, yeah. On surface level – I mean, I can't say. Maybe there is, maybe there isn't. On surface level, there isn't. But until we actually say, well, let's take a look at this and see if there are any similarities between these things. You know, I'm thinking about the story of the Vietnam Rock Apes and, you know.
The woman who saved the guys from the flamethrower that's in your book?
Yeah,
poison
exactly.
gas. That was a poison
exactly.
gas, not a flamethrower. But, yeah, there's a lady, there's this kind of entity saved, some entity like emerged out of a cloud of poison gas and gave a drink to a bunch of dudes and soldiers. And they were like the only ones who survived the poison gas. And no one ever found the lady again or the soldier or whatever. I'm butchering the story, but I did read the book.
Read
the book. So
I know you either read the book or you're the world's best bullshitter. But yeah, I mean, like, again, I don't know if there's any connection there, any significance in what people are seeing or how the encounters play out. But let's just take a look at it, you know. Let's start throwing two things together and seeing if there's something of greater significance that emerges from juxtaposing those two things.
Absolutely,
so
yeah.
I think that's going to be my approach then. Saying, hey, nobody's ever talked about this. Can we talk about this? So,
yeah. Well, I mean, I can't speak for Greg, but it's like we're not necessarily calling for the death of ufology, just the death of the way things are done. You know, it's like
he can't really keep
doing it this way.
Yeah, and he and I had a brief email exchange about this, and about how that's not exactly what he's getting at, but I think that there's still some stuff to talk about here, but we need to completely, you know, we need the etch-a-sketch solution to the whole thing and just shake it up and start from scratch.
Yeah, and the problem is that, like, everything rests on this really rickety foundation of the ETH, where it's like we need to start building a new place. We need to be like, we can't just build foundation here of this bad hypothesis.
I hope I didn't come off as too staunchly anti-ETH, but, you know, it doesn't make any sense to me.
No, I didn't get any sense that you were like
anti-ETH. There's a lot of holes there, you know?
Yeah. No, there's a ton of holes.
Good to know. Yeah. Just like, again, I would love for Sasquatch to be flesh and blood, but there's a lot of holes in that, too. So.
Right. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Did you just break a dish?
No, I'm sorry. The dishes were just settling. I was in here in the kitchen pacing.
Uh-oh.
No, it's not your fault. And sorry about the ice. I didn't mean for that to be as loud as it was.
No. Don't worry about it. I somewhere along the way, I changed my policy from like just ignore it and pretend like it's not in the background. This is not with you. I just mean with the show in general. Like over the years.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like when I first started out, I'd be like, oh shit, what's that sound? You know, and not say anything. But then I came to the conclusion or the realization that it's like, I'm noticing it. The listeners are noticing it. Let's just acknowledge it. And that way, at least, you know what I mean? Because if I was a listener and I heard clinking and everything, that would distract me enough where I'd be like, what's he doing? You know? So I feel like people like that.
No. I totally get it. There's the term in screenwriting for that. You know, whenever there's a plot point and they directly address it and say, "Oh, that's funny. We should have thought of that." Called lampshading.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
Yeah. So you're lampshading the podcast.
Now, do you do any writing? Like you're launching this. You said you're going to launch a website soon or a blog or something, sort of a hub, because I asked you when we started the show, you don't have a hub yet to direct people to except for Anomalous Books. So when you do launch your hub, will you be – are you going to be, like, doing some writing and stuff there too? I presume so.
Yeah, I mean, that's the plan. I literally hope to have something up in the next 24 hours because I really do need to start directing people pushing people in that direction. You know, this is the only there hasn't really been a need for it until now. This is the only thing that I've done independently that hasn't been, usually I'm in a band or there's, you know, it's work related and work handles their own, their own press for stuff like that. So there hasn't really been a need for me to have, a self-serving website yet. So, I plan on having sort of it being a one-stop shop. So it'll have some, samples of my music. It'll have, my discography up there. It'll have bios, links to the interviews like this, and it'll also, yeah, I also plan on keeping a daily or every other day blog entry. It's about something, something in the news or something I noticed, nothing too lengthy, 350, 400 words.
Daily. Why would you commit to that? I can't even commit to a weekly show.
I told you, man, I'm doubling down on this. I've got my wife has been very supportive of this this entire approach, because once you write a book like this, it's the die is cast.
Yeah.
You know? And she hasn't batted an eye, really. She's just been really proud of me. And my family has too. Once you write a book like this, it gets pretty easy to separate the people who don't like this stuff from the people who think it's interesting.
Yeah. I know what you mean. Yeah. I've long since given up telling people like exactly what I do, because it's just annoying. I don't really want to get into it too much. You know what I mean? It's like you just don't know how you're going to get it, what kind of reaction you're going to get, and it's like negative reaction. That goes without saying. You don't want to deal with people that are like, that's all stupid. You know, forget those people. Those are like,
right.
Yeah. And then it's like the people that, I don't know how long you've been like really kind of digging into all this, but I've been digging into it for like almost 12 years now. And it's like, to me, it's like, I don't want to hear another UFO story, at least from like a person I run into or somebody I went to high school with that, you know what I mean? It's like, oh God, really? It's like,
yeah,
it's cool that happened to you, but I've heard a thousand stories that are more crazier than what you think is the craziest thing that happened.
Yeah, exactly. There's this, it's sort of the way I've always felt about me and my religious life, is that I'm too religious for the atheists and too free thinking for a lot of the zealots. You know, I sort of feel like that's the way that I am with this.
Yeah.
I've been looking into this stuff for a long time. I had books like Jerome Clark's Unexplained in middle school, and, I've been into this for a while. I haven't really, honestly, Tim, one of my biggest fears all the way, literally up until like 3-4 years ago, even though in my rational mind, I knew that it was highly unlikely, nay, impossible, was alien abduction. Like I couldn't even look at a picture of a gray without freaking out.
Oh God, really?
And, I'm sure Stephen Greer or Bassett are sitting waiting in the wings listening to this thing. It means you're an abductee.
But, I was just gonna say, yeah, like, yeah. People would jump to that conclusion like immediately. But who knows? It is scary. I mean, the thing is freaky. But to go against that idea, it's like, I don't like ventriloquist dummies, but I was not like molested by a ventriloquist or anything.
Right. No, I honestly tie it to my dad. I love him to death. He's a great man. But he showed me Close Encounters of the Third Kind when I was way too young. and there are some, like, everybody always thinks of the warm fuzzies at the end, but there are some legitimately horrifying moments with the young boy in the farmhouse.
Yeah.
With the grate, the screws on the grate, unscrewing themselves and the light coming through the chimney. I mean, I'm getting the willies thinking about it right now, and my wife's in the other room. In a lot of ways, like, so I started listening to some of this stuff really, really in depth about 3 years ago, and just really immersed myself. And it was sort of like exposure therapy. So that's no longer a fear for me anymore. Mainly because I've wrapped my head around the complexities of this, and I feel like I could call the grays out on their bullshit if they started it on me. And be like, no, you're not gonna do this, and I'm not drinking that.
Yeah.
So just put it away. So yeah, it's been an interesting trip, but so far everybody that I've met and interacted with, and I know that there are people in every field who aren't this way, but everyone that I've talked with so far has been incredibly kind and incredibly supportive and enthusiastic, and they've just been really, really nice folks. So,
well, from my perspective and the folks that I kind of the circles I run in, it's like we're always happy to have real thoughtful people doing thoughtful work. That's all we're asking for. You know what I mean?
It's right, like, right. Mm-hmm.
That's preferable over sort of the showmanship and everything. So that's that's really what drives me crazy.
I was just gonna say my and the flip side, of course, is there are plenty of things that I hear in this field that, to use a Mike Cleland term, make my toes curl in my shoes. But
how so? That you just find it so crazy that you're just, like, oh, throw up your hands, like, just, oh, why am I bothering with these?
You know, the example that Mike always uses is like, look at this picture. There's a cloud above me, and in that cloud, there's a mothership. And it's like, you know.
Yeah.
Just completely, you know, just leaps of logic, and, you know, just to something that's so outlandish. It's like, I gotta, maybe going through what you've gone through, that makes sense, but to someone on the outside, that does not sound like it makes any sort of logical sense.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, it's difficult. I kind of railed on the quote unquote consumers of all this a few shows ago, but it is, you know, it's a difficult road to hoe if you're folks like me and you and Greg. It's like we as Greg penned, you know, the excluded middle. It's like we're the sort of people who aren't out there trying to say that there's a mothership inside the cloud. So it's like you're already losing
exactly
the cloud mothership audience, who are like, why aren't you saying that this is part of some grand agenda to, you know, I don't know, stop eating cows or whatever. It's like they just have to attach everything to their pet theory or their worldview. And it's like, oh, dude, no, just come at this with an open mind. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
Sometimes the cigar is just a cigar.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, I've kept you for an extra half hour. I feel bad. I should let you get going.
Oh,
we could talk forever.
No, that's fine.
So,
like I said, this is the focal point of my day. So made it this far. Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to talk about? Anybody ask me? Because you said you're listening to the show, so I always kind of like to throw that out at people who do listen to the show, in case you were wondering anything, like, why do I do this? Or
actually, one thing that I did want to say, and just wanted to commend you on, again, I'm just being such a kiss-ass, that last interview with the Jonestown lady was just, that was phenomenal, man. That's like, in my mind, that was... And the way that you approached it in your rapport with her, that was Peabody type stuff. You know, that was really good.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. Yeah, we've gotten a lot of great feedback on it. It was an amazing show. I'll be honest. I still think about that episode. You know what I mean? It's been like a week or so, and I read the book like over the course of a week before that. So it's like every now and then it'll still cross my mind. Stuff I want to still ask her, stuff like that, just how amazing that whole story was. What a triumph of the human spirit. Just amazing. So,
right. I mean, it was, I mean, I love the esoterica, and I was sort of like, this is going to be serious. It's going to be heavy, but it was thoughtful and sensitive, and it was just great. It's just great. Turns out she lives like 15 minutes from me too. I found that out.
From you?
Yeah, yeah.
She lived. That's weird, because for a while she lived like 15 minutes from me.
No shit. Yeah, she lives.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah, she lives in the same county as me, actually. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, funny.
Yeah. Yeah. I was, yeah, you know, it's funny because you kind of hit the nail on the head of what I was concerned about going into the show. I'll break the fourth wall a little bit here, and we're still on the air right now, not live, but
right.
I don't mind if people hear this because it's cool to think about or talk about it. It's like, but I kind of thought the same thing going in, where it was like, this is a really delicate story, and I have to really handle this like with kid gloves, and I kind of opened the interview talking about that in a way, but Leslie was so down to earth and like easygoing that it really like sort of took a lot of the air out of the tension. You know what I mean? And it really helped the conversation
a lot. Exactly
what I mean. I was really happy about that, because like I said, I was going into it like, this is like the worst thing that ever happened to this person, and I'm gonna now make her relive it and ask her questions about it. But she was so cool about everything that it really like let me take my guard down and really kind of dig into it. So I think she'll be back on the show in the future to sort of get more into all this stuff, because just telling the story alone took 2 hours.
But, yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, it's well, yeah, it was. Well, yeah, already said what I can say about it. It was just it was really, really powerful. So
yeah,
kudos
well,
to you,
man.
On that. I mean, you know, if I do not think it would be unwelcome if stuff like that was worked in every couple of weeks. So
yeah, well, as time's gone by with the show, it's like there's no, there's only so many times you can kind of go over the same thing, you know what I mean? So that's why as soon as I got your book, I was like, oh, man, get this guy on the show. This is so different that I really want to talk about it, you know?
Well, I really appreciate it, Tim. Thanks so much for having me on, and you've been a great host.
No, I appreciate that, man. I really do. Hopefully I held up my end here. It was luckily the pain's all gone away from the molar being pulled, so we're in good shape.
I was about to say, and feel better, get better soon. That sucks.
Yeah, I'll be fine in a day or two. It'll be good. The problem is I got to watch
all
my
right.
I got to regulate my cigarette smoking, cuz it's like you can't be doing that kind of shit when you got an open wound. So
yeah.
I got to
yeah.
be careful
yeah,
with that.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Yeah. But we'll hopefully I will survive and we'll all be good. And good luck on Sunday on Coast to Coast. I'll be working the website that night, so I'll be listening.
Oh, great. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
I think
it'll
be a great show. Of course, the book
is looking forward to it.
A Trojan Feast, and you can get that at anomalistbooks.com, also Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the booksellers. Folks, seriously, this is a fantastic book. Now is the time to really pick up a book like this, too. This is, you know, I read it out on my deck in the sun, enjoying the weather. This is a great beach book because you're going to really dig into it and just dive in and really get sort of invested in this story and learning more about these weird happenings with these food exchanges. So go out and pick up A Trojan Feast. It is outstanding. And as I said, it really is. It's really one of a kind, or the first of its kind, really looking at this phenomenon. So it's an absolute must for any student of esoterica to have in their book collection. So A Trojan Feast, Joshua Cutchin, thank you so much for coming on the show, dude. If there's anything I can ever do to help you out, please do not hesitate to ask. Reach out, and I'd be happy to lend a hand, my friend.
Same stands for you. Thanks so much, Tim. I appreciate it.
All right, buddy. You can have a good night. I'm going to do my plugs now, and then I will be calling it a night. So thank you again, and
right.
We'll be in touch.
Thanks again, Tim. I really appreciate it. You have a great night, man.
You too. Good night.
Take care.
All right, folks. There you go. That was Joshua Cutchin. He is the author, of course, of A Trojan Feast. And once again, you can find out more about that and how to pick it up at anomalistbooks.com. I wasn't just saying all that nice stuff because Joshua was on the show, folks. Believe me, this is a really fantastic book and enlightening stuff, really unique stuff. I really put Joshua over here on the show big time because I really do appreciate people that dig into the peripheral aspect of all this. And finally, somebody looked at the food exchange material and produced a book, and that was Joshua Cutchin, and the book is fantastic. So go out and pick up A Trojan Feast. If you're just listening to this program for the first time, you have no idea who we are or what we are. We are Banal of America. We're currently in our 9th season of the program, so we have a massive archive that you can dig into at BOA, and that is absolutely free. Where can you go to find all this good stuff? That's simple, banalofamerica.com, B-I-N-N-A-L-L of America.com. We're also on Facebook, so just punch in Banal of America on Facebook. That'll bring up the page. Feel free to like us there. That's where we post the latest news on who's going to be appearing on the show next, as well as some throwback stuff when topics previously discussed on the program pop up in the news. I like to throw up a little linkage to previous editions of the program so folks can get further educated on what's making news. As I said, we've got a massive archive at Banal of America, 200 plus episodes there covering just about every paranormal topic you can think of, and it is absolutely free. And of course, tonight's program was coming at you live, and that was also absolutely free. It's not free like, you know, like a Metro paper you find in the subway, folks. It's free because I have to pay for it all in order for all of you to get it. So I turn to all of you now to ask to help us out, make a donation, make sure we can pay the bills here to keep everything up and running. There are two ways to do so. You can head on over to Banal of America and click the PayPal button. That'll take you to PayPal. They'll walk you through the process. It's safe, secure, and simple. But if you don't trust the internet and you want to make a snail mail donation, you can do so by heading over to Banal of America and getting the P.O. Box address. It's right there next to the PayPal button. On the next edition of the program, I cannot tell you who will be on the next edition of the program because I do not know just yet who it will be. But I got a couple of folks lined up. It's either going to be a taped show or a live show, obviously. And I should know something about that by the end of the weekend. So stay tuned to Banal of America and BOA on Facebook for more information on that. Hopefully it'll be a killer guest. We've got a whole bunch of folks lined up for future installments of the program. It's all, especially when you're working in this live format, a matter of plugging folks into the right days and the right weeks. But we've got some really cool discussions lined up for future installments of the program. Well, we're nearly gone 2 hours and 45 minutes here, so it's probably best that I wrap up the program right here and now. So, with all that said, I want to thank Joshua Cutchin once again for appearing on the program. Fantastic conversation, fantastic material uncovered there by Joshua. Folks, go out and get a Trojan feast. Thank you to all the newcomers who've just discovered the program recently. Thank you to the hardcore BOA audio listeners who've been around from the very beginning or nearly the very beginning. You guys are the absolute best. Thank you for your enduring support of the program. And, of course, thank you once again for making BOA Audio a part of your esoteric audio playlist. Until next time, this is Tim Banal, thanking you for listening and signing off.